Recently, I've been impressed with the sacredness of the concept of place, P-L-A-C-E. I've been, as you have, been probably impressed and hurt by the fact that so many hundreds of thousands of people have been robbed of their places. Kosovo, in Florida, the fires that have ravaged the lives and homes of people, their places have been taken away from them. You remember the scene in Oklahoma City and the devastation of the tornado just ripped through miles. And I thought, those people, their places have been ripped away from them. Down in Central America, the flooding, the hurricanes, and every time I see some old person or even a middle-aged person who perhaps has spent 30 years building and tweaking and taking care of their place, regardless of how fancy or fine or how mundane or it is, it's their place. And it just means so much. It means that much to you, your place. If I were to ask you to hold up your hand, where are you, how many of you are sitting, if not in the very seat that you normally sit in, you're sitting in the area that you normally sit in, the vast majority of us would raise our hand. How many of you felt discombobulated when you came in here the other Sunday morning and this thing was in the round? What did it do to you emotionally? You must have thought, well, where is my place? Because it upset you. I bombed at the Indianapolis Evangelism Seminar, I think that's what it's called, about 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, I made a major boo. It was a blooper. I was preaching on going outside the camp with Jesus. And I said it means getting outside your comfort zone. Get outside the camp. Go out there with him where the reproach is. And I said to them, this large audience of people, I said, let me just illustrate it. I said, let's all stand. And so they all stood up. And I said, now all those over here come over here, and all those over here come over here. Wow. I didn't have a chance. They hated me from the minute I said it. I never did get them back. It's the only time I thought, well, how dumb. I could have said that's what we could do, you know, and make you feel, and they could have thought that, you know, prospect, that's not very good. But to stand there until they all get one place or the other, some of them just sat there and they thought, I'm not moving. I should have known better. But we're all like that. Little babies, they want their mother's breast. That's their place. And they want to sit where they normally sit. And you have your seat at your table. That's your place. And everywhere you go, you know, there are people who have their place. And we're just simply all like that. So I've been impressed with the sacredness of this concept of place. And that's why we sang this song, there is a place of constant rest. And this world is not my home. I'm just passing through. If heaven's not my home, then Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me through heaven's open door. And I can't feel at home in this home, in this world anymore. I was most impressed with that song when I heard people in the jail who had been converted singing, this jail is not my home. I cannot feel at home in this jail anymore. And they were looking for release and then to a greater home. How are you about your place? As I get older, I think it's bad. It's bad when you're young. You have your place. It's not just old age. But as you get older, you want some place that you can call home. You want your roots down. Louine told me when we were leaving Boston, she said, you have drugged me all over this earth all my life. And she said, I want to go somewhere where I can put my roots down. I said, okay. Two places have pulled at us, this place here, you people. Genuinely pull at my heart, and I don't know why, but you do. And Searcy, Arkansas, that little town in Arkansas, it pulls because of our roots there for 30 years and because of our grandchildren being in that part of the country. If it weren't for that, I'd be sitting right here in the middle of you. And I put on my card, I have been immersed and I want to be a member of this church, and I've marked it, and I'm expecting you to honor that, Bill. And like I said, I'm here as much as Jim as you are and your wife. It shows up in our songs, in the little ditties and the musical ditties that we sing. You remember when you were young singing, good morning to you, good morning to you, we're all in our places with bright shiny faces. You remember that? And then the song at the other end of the spectrum from the innocence of that, it was a drinking song. Show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. You know it? I had a little drink about an hour ago and it went straight to my head. I bet that's the first we've ever sung that in a minute. Wherever I may roam, or land or sea or foam, you can always hear me singing this song, show me the way to go home. And then the classical one, going home, going home, I'm just going home. Is that from the New World Symphony by Dvorak? It is, isn't it? And then all of our state songs, you know, people from up from south who move north, what are they saying? Oh, I wish I was in the land of cotton, old time there and not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. And then people who are from California, they sing, San Francisco, here I've come, right back where I started from. People from Kentucky, my old Kentucky home, Alabama, Carolina, Georgia. What's the one from Texas that we'd sing? Oh, man, okay. I should never have asked. And if anybody whoops, you're going to be in trouble. The eyes of Texas are upon you. Is that no? That's one of those. But there's another one where the no. It's where the deer and the antelope. How does it start? I try to home, home on the range. You see there, all of those songs, and they even sing about New York. Who in the world would sing something about New York? But they do. And the one I think that tears my heart out is to see the old slave leaning on his hoe singing, sometimes I feel like a motherless child, a long way from home. Can you imagine the way they must have felt? But it's not just human beings. It's just things that are alive, things that are not alive. Everything in our system has its place, has its orbit. And if those inanimate objects get out of their orbit, they burn up. They can't live outside their orbit. Animals, they have to have their place. Recently, Boston has built a tunnel underneath part of that city. I think part of it goes out to the airport and part of it. But they built that and they came out of the paper and warned, be on the lookout now. He said, the rats who have their city underneath Boston, their city is being destroyed. It's being torn up. And you're going to see rats everywhere. Well, sure enough, once they started digging down through the crust of the earth and disturbing the rat city, they have their own roads, they have everything, but you disturb all that, they started showing up everywhere because they were displaced. A year or so ago, Harding built the music building out in the field, out in what was normally a field, had been for years. Guess who started showing up in the offices of the teachers? The mice. My daughter teaches there, and she said a week or so after they got into the building, she was seeing mice droppings here all in her office, and there he goes, little old mouse. Well, she was in his territory. She was in his place. And he wasn't about it. You can't have it. It's my place. I love it the way we're just all that way. It's amazing. We took our granddaughters to the zoo in Little Rock, and they got to see all these animals. And they, you know, there were some from Australia and others from different places, and they got to see them. And they were intrigued by the fact that all of them had their place there, and it had been reconstructed from what it was. It had been made, and guess how they made them? Guess how they make each animal's place in a zoo? How? What do they try to do? They try to make it like where they were in their original habitat. So they make these temporary places of residence, they try to make them as much like where they were originally. But it's just all one massive plan that God has made it so that people, we want our place. I got to thinking that Jesus did something different because he's made us a place that's different from our place here. Then I got to thinking, well, hold on a minute. This isn't our place. We're displaced people. There's a memory that's been handed down for us, to us, and it's an unconscious memory perhaps, but we're displaced people. This home of this world is not our home. We're just passing through. What resides in our unconscious or subconscious memory is the paradise that God created us to live in that doesn't have all that we have today. Doesn't have the disorder. It doesn't have the anguish and the tears. He designed something back then. Then when sin came in and it kicked us out of our place, then we're living as displaced people. And Jesus came and showed us and told us, I'm going to prepare a place. You remember what he said in John 14? Don't let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I told you that I go to prepare a place for you. And when I go and prepare a place, I will come and again and take you to myself, that where I am, or in the place where I am, there you will be also. So he talks about place. Does that? It touches me to find that there's that commonality among all of us. We're all that way. And we have this insatiable yearning. Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians when he says we have this yearning, not that we be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed and take upon ourselves this habitation that is built in the heavens, that is heavenly and eternal. It's not like a tent we're living in, this temporary residence. And in Revelation, the 21st chapter, I believe it is, he mentioned, and I'm reading out of the Revised Standard. The elders told me not to do this when I was living among you, and so I went and got an NIV, and I have it with me, but the back fell off of it, and I didn't realize it until I looked at it this morning. And the back was in one hand, and the Bible was in the other. I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. So I brought my old standby. Listen to this. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Behold, the dwelling of God is with men. He will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. That's a description of this home that he's preparing for us. But you may be saying, and I understand why, I need something now. I need something way long time before I get over there. I need something now to get me through. I need something. And you do. I do too. You need a place where you can be you. Be who you are. You need some place where you can be yourself. You need some place where you can be loved in spite of your being yourself. You know, everybody in here at some point or other stinks. Admit it. You need to be somewhere where you can be loved in spite of who you are. And you need to be somewhere where you can grow beyond who you are. So you need to be somewhere where you can be yourself. You need to be somewhere where you can be loved in spite of yourself. And you need to be somewhere where you can be encouraged to grow beyond yourself. There's a poem, and I may have read it to you. I don't know, but let me read this. If this is not a place where tears are understood, then where shall I go to cry? If this is not a place where my spirit can take wings, then where shall I go to fly? I don't need another place for trying to impress you with just how good and virtuous I am. No, no, no. I don't need another place for always being on top of things. Everybody knows that it's a sham. It's a sham. I don't need another place for always wearing smiles, even when it's not the way I feel. I don't need another place to mouth the same old platitudes. Everybody knows it's not real. So if this is not a place where my questions can be asked, then where shall I go to seek? And if this is not a place where my heart cry can be heard, where, tell me where, shall I go to speak? So if this is not a place where tears are understood, where shall I go? Where shall I go to fly? You know what Jesus did for us? He's given us that place. You remember the story of Brer Rabbit and Brer Fox and Brer Bear in Uncle Remus Tales? I love that story. Brer Rabbit was this little old innocent rabbit. Brer Fox was the cunning one, sly one, and Brer Bear was this big old dumb ox, you know. And they were going to cook Brer Rabbit and have him for dinner. And they've been all through it. They schemed against Brer Rabbit. And you little children, you've not seen this movie, and it is a jewel. But you're not likely to see it. It's not shown in America anymore. I have a copy of it, and I'd love to show it to you sometimes. But the bear and the fox, they try to outwit this Brer Rabbit. And so they finally, they trick him, and sure enough, they catch him. And Brer Fox and Brer Bear, they're so excited about it. They're just jumping up and down, and they go and they start strutting their stuff in front of Brer Rabbit. He's all tied up, you know, and Brer Rabbit, or Brer Fox, gets down in Brer Rabbit's face and said, "I'm going to skin you alive." And Brer Rabbit said, "Oh, okay. You're okay, Brer Fox. That's all right. Skin me alive if you want to, but don't, please don't throw me in that briar patch." And Brother Fox said, "Yeah, I'm going to skin you alive, and then I'm going to boil you in oil." And Brer Rabbit said, "Okay, Brer Fox, that's all right. You can skin me alive, and you can boil me in oil, but please don't throw me in that briar patch." And he'd been logging that in that Brer Fox's mind, briar patch. And it finally registered with Brer Fox that, "Oh, you mean that's worse than being fried in oil and skinned alive? Yeah, don't throw me in that briar patch." And Brer Fox finally caught on. And Brer Bear was dumb, but he wasn't that dumb. He said, "Don't throw him in there." "Oh," he said, "no, that's where I'm going to throw him." And he heaved and threw him in there, just head over tail. He landed in that briar patch, and there was quietness for a minute. And then here he jumped out of that briar patch and started singing, "Born and bred in a briar patch, born and bred in a briar patch." And he started jumping up and down, and there they stood. They'd been taken by him again. Later on, he started singing, "Everybody's got a laughing place, a laughing place, a laughing place, everybody." And those, they were taken again. You know, they completely fouled up. And it's true. He was born and bred in that briar patch. Now the foxes and the bears, the Brer Fox and Brer Bear of the world, it didn't look like much of a home to them. Guess what is your briar patch? This is your briar patch. The church is your briar patch. And the people who drive by on their way, wherever they're going on Lord's Day, when we're gathered around the table, Burr Fox and Burr Bear drive by here and they think, man, surely that's not anybody's home. But it's your home. It's your briar patch. This is this. And look around. Look at each other. Just look around a minute. And some of the ones you look at are going to be the ones who are the thorns. Yeah, some of the briars, and you think that's all there is in a briar patch. That's right. There aren't any roses in a briar patch. They're all briars. And the reason why you don't get stuck by some is that they're headed or turned in the other direction. But you come at it from another direction and they're going to stick you. Everybody's going to find that the church is a briar patch. And there's not much you're going to be able to do to change it. But you can do this. You can just sing to each other, born and bred in a briar patch. And everybody's got a laughing place. A laughing place. A laughing place. This is your laughing place. This is a place where tears are understood. This is a place where your spirit can take wings. If this is not a place, this was written about the church. And I think that many times we become dissatisfied with the church because we don't realize that the church is not a place where all of a sudden you become perfect and whole and you know how to deal with folks. The church consists of simply people who are unwhole, they're out of balance, they're sick, just like a hospital. Wouldn't it be strange if a person went into the hospital and then left in a huff because everybody in there was sick? That's why Jesus said, you know, love is the way you can tell if you're my disciples. By this, the world will know that you're my disciples if you love each other. And it just doesn't matter. Anything else, any other agenda has no place in the church except my agenda is to love each other. That's it. Would you agree that that's it? That's our agenda. And any other agenda is out of place. And if you ever get your eye off of that, you're always going to get in trouble. And you can just tell the burr bears and burr foxes, I know it doesn't look all that hot. And I know there isn't all that much perfection there. And I know that there are problems. But that's my briar patch. Those folks are my family. That's my laughing place. In times of stress and trouble, it's the church. It's this briar patch that you need to flee to. In death, in times of divorce, in times of whatever may be bothering you right now, there'll be times in your life when you're going to want to be among people. There was a man, I can't remember whether he was here, I think it was here. Some brother who was not all that visible and not all that vocal about how he loved the church. In fact, his wife pretty well had to get him up on Sunday mornings and bring him. Their son died, see if this rings a bell, their son died. And it was an untimely death, whether it was in an accident or what, I can't remember. But they didn't know what effect it was going to have on this husband, the father of the boy. And so he died and the funeral was during the week. Boy, Sunday morning, they didn't know whether he'd go to church or not. He was the one that got up first. And he got the family up. And they were all shocked that he would take the initiative and do that. But he made this statement. He said, it's in times like these that I need to be among people I love and who love me. And he got his family up and they all came and assembled around the table. And it made him move because he just had that need. Sometimes, though, you can't go to your briar patch. Sometimes your condition is such that the briar patch has to come to you. Last year, sometime or other, my nephew, 45-year-old, Bob Woodruff from Pepperdine University, he'd been fighting cancer for about 2 years. He finally got the best out of him. And in his closing hours at the hospital, people from that Christian university flooded the halls of the hospital. And they just simply stood around the door, stood in the room, stood down the hallway, spilled over into just wherever you could look. There they were. The briar patch had come to Bob. And they began to sing. And the halls of that hospital began to reverberate those Christian hymns of faith and love. The hospital out there in California had never experienced anything like that, when a briar patch would come to a rabbit and sing to him. But they did, and it made such an impact on the whole hospital, it just kind of startled them, got their attention. In 1997, while we were here, I think, and I may have told you about it, Tommy Lashley, one of the former elders of the church in that area, Tommy Lashley had been on a kidney machine, a dialysis for some, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And he had gotten to where he couldn't go to church. He'd gotten to where he just couldn't. He was taking this dialysis, the cleansing, twice a day or so. Finally, after about 4 years, this great godly man said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to take any more dialysis. That meant he had about a week to live. Maybe it was longer than that, but by the time the people got word of it, they sent out letters. And they sent out letters to all of his friends. And they said, we're going to have a farewell party for Tommy Lashley. They never had given a farewell party for anybody like that before. But they said, we're going to give a farewell party. And they sent these letters out, and about 200 of his old friends, Christian friends from that area, they all assembled at the Muskogee Church building that night. One Friday night, they sang and they prayed, they ate together. Tommy could come, he came to that finally as one of his last outings. They had a movie, they had made a video of his life. It was the neatest thing. And that, when he couldn't go around and see all of his friends, but they all came and saw him. And they prayed, and it was just a joyful occasion of wishing him well. And then the following Wednesday, he checked out and went home. When you can't get to the briar patch, sometimes the briar patch has to come to you. And where on earth could you find that sort of a camaraderie? Except among people like you, who are all briars and who are all rabbits. That's where it's at. And you know, that's what really and truly is the distinguishing characteristic that sets the Christian spirit and the Christian apart from the world of darkness. Now, this story about Rachel, my daughter, and this little class that she had there, I don't know how many, 15 or 20 students in it, she was explaining to them one day what compound words were. Briar patch is a compound word. She didn't use it, but briar patch and laughing place, and those compound words, and they were just little second or third graders. Well, they were intrigued. They never heard anything like that, and they were just locked in on what she was saying. And then all of a sudden, the little boy Raymond just burst out laughing. Broke the whole spell. It startled her. Everybody else was kind of jumped and late. He just rolled. He just laughed and laughed. Well, Rachel went over and said, Raymond, why did you do that? You just disrupted the whole class. What's the occasion? What's the problem? And it embarrassed him, because he just said, I don't know, Miss Bossier. And Rachel's a pretty good disciplinarian. She said, well, you find out in the next 5 minutes, and I'm going to come back and you tell us why you disrupted the whole class. So she went on teaching, and in about 5 minutes she went back to him and said, Raymond, have you figured out why it was you burst out laughing? And he said, yes, ma'am. He said, there was just a laugh deep down inside of me that had to get out. And so touched her. She's easily touched. She's a very emotional girl. She had to turn around quickly to the board and write on the board, because she was starting to cry. And so she turned around until she got her composure and wrote on the board some assignments. And then she turned around and dismissed them to playtime. And in the meantime, she went to the workroom and prepared a great big sign that became the motto of the theme for their whole year. And the theme on that sign, it said, let the laughter begin. And there they were every morning. They would come into the school. Let the laughter begin. I think that's what Christian people need to experience. And up over these doors, whether literally or figuratively, when you see these doors, you ought to be able to say, let the laughter begin. It means the joy of the Lord has lodged itself in your heart. And it won't always be that you're giddy, but you'll always be joyful because of what you've been given in Him. That you, in Him, have been given this seating of this place, the heavenly places. You enjoy that with Him now. It's not something in the future. You enjoy that now. And this is your laughing place. And if it is, you'll kick Satan in the teeth and you will never, ever let him speak against some of your fellow rabbits who are living in this briar patch. You were born and bred here. And everybody has a laughing place, and this is yours.